This podcast is supported by Australian Ethical. Australian Ethical grow your retirement savings without sacrificing integrity for performance, so you can build a better future for yourself and our world. Because when your super prospers, we all thrive. Please read the FSG, PDS and TMD on the website to consider if the product is right for you and the ethical guide to understand how they invest. Issued by Australian Ethical Superannuation Proprietary Limited, AFSL 526055.
Well, Susan Lee, welcome to the pod.
It's great to be here. I think this is my second visit.
Yes, yes. I think you might be the first Liberal opposition leader on the pod, so we're thrilled to have
you. I'm honoured.
Thank you very much. And it's been a big day. Give me your reflections on how things are going with the EPBC bill. Are you disappointed that a deal has been done with the Greens instead of with the Coalition?
I am, but not for the reasons that people inside the Beltway might think. I'm disappointed for business industries, consumers and the Australian national interest, because the deal done with the Greens is not going to be in the interests of affordable energy or responsible emissions, which is the core of our energy plan. And it's going to be really tough for businesses to get the assessments and approvals that they need in a timely manner, which is exactly what the government said the whole thing was all about. And I can't see a pathway for that. And I've always believed that assessments and approvals that are done well balance the interests of the environment. So as a previous environment minister, the issues of environmental protection are really important to me. It's not one or the other. It's making both work.
There were late night negotiations and I think some calls back and forth this morning, maybe some messages as well. Was there a serious prospect of a deal with the Coalition?
I don't think there was. And I know that last night, probably 9 p.m, I was still talking to my team and to Shadow Environment Minister Angie Bell, Senator Dunham, who was managing the process in the Senate. And we actually were quite optimistic. And we had seven key areas that we had asked on behalf of industry for further clarification and amendments. We hadn't heard back. And then very early this morning, it appeared that we were never going to hear back. And I'm really disappointed because I don't think the government has approached this in good faith at all. And I think the plan all along was to do the deal with the Greens. And I say this because the Environment Minister has spent at least a week saying, well, I've got two sets of amendments, one for the Greens and one for the Coalition, and I don't mind which one gets up. Well, where's the policy integrity in that? It's a political fix that he's talking about, and I think he had his eye on that political fix and knew exactly where he was going with it. But yes, stepping back from the inside the bubble conversation, if I can call it that, because I know a lot of your listeners genuinely care about the environment and I want to assure them that I do too. So this is about what happens next and how we actually get results and change. And I think we're going to get a lot more bureaucracy. I think we're going to get a lot of projects bogged down. And I don't think we're going to get the energy transition that this country deserves, which really relies on gas, which is now going to be put in the slow lane. And what that means is approvals for gas projects are going to take a back seat. And that's not good for our economy and it's not good for the energy transition either.
I'm eager to move on to other issues, but let me ask you one more brief question on this. Does it make your job more difficult with voters who are concerned about the environment, some who might have already moved away from the Coalition? I'm thinking about some of the Teal voters in this case.
I understand when I talk to voters, and I spoke to a lot of young voters after we lost the election. I continue to do that. I speak to women. I speak to everyone. But I also listen to them, and that's important too. So I have heard what they've said to me. And when they have said we care about the climate and we care about the environment, I reassure them that I do too. And I have six grandchildren and I want them to inherit an Australia where we have the right protections for our environment in place. But more importantly, I don't want them to have a lower standard of living than their parents or their grandparents. And unfortunately, the economic policy of this government is set to deliver the worst standard of living. And that's not fair. That's not right. So then I talk about our responsible emissions reduction. And I do reassure people that we haven't walked away from that. And I said from the beginning that that would be important. And that is about reducing emissions year on year, in line with comparable countries, as far and as fast as technology will allow. And I give them a third piece of information. I say, look, since 2005, we've reduced emissions in Australia at almost twice the rate of developed countries, comparable countries. And if we're to get to the net zero target, we're going to have to double that again. And that means that we're streaking ahead. And how is that actually helping emissions for the globe? In fact, it's not, because what it's doing is driving the industries that make emissions offshore, because we still need the products that are made. We still need steel. We still need aluminium. We need plastics. We need fertilizer. We need cement. These are the building blocks of a modern economy. Well, if we push those industries offshore, and the Business Council says that the 2035 target will push $150 billion worth of businesses offshore, then the globe is not assisted by that. But we go backwards in terms of our living standards and productivity. That's a long answer to what you wanted to be, quite a short one. So
We don't mind long answers on the pod. It's been a frenetic day here at Parliament. Let me ask you about some of the other things that have been going on. Are you disappointed that Barnaby Joyce, the former Nationals leader, is moving to the crossbench? What does it say about the state of the coalition? It's not exactly a vote of confidence.
I'm the leader of the Liberal Party, very, very proud to lead a party with the values that we hold of freedom, of aspiration, of enterprise, choice, working hard, keeping more of what you earn. And that's vital to me. I sit in the Liberal Party party room and we meet separately from the Nationals. Barnaby was a member of the Nationals. I've never sat in their party room and I don't pretend to know what the dynamic is. And I don't mean that in a negative way. It's just not something that I'd comment on. Barnaby's been a friend of mine over many years, and sometimes people think it's strange that different people who might have different philosophies about a range of things have friendships, but we're no different than anyone's friends and family in the community. And so yeah, I chat to him about various things, but not about those things. And he's welcome to make the decisions that he's made. And it's really a matter for him and the Nationals, not for me or the Liberals.
Are you concerned about the place of One Nation in the political discourse? I think that a lot of our listeners will think that they are a party that has racist policies and certainly racist rhetoric. Interested in your views on that.
We're not One Nation, and I'm not here to cut One Nation any slack in terms of some of the things that are said, done, and perceptions. I spend very little time considering those. I did say about the stunt that their leader pulled in the Senate that it cheapened the Senate of Australia and the Parliament of Australia. This is where we are legislators. We should be considering serious, credible policies and competing, yes, in the contest of ideas from the perspectives of our different philosophies. And we should do that respectfully. And that stunt cheapened the Senate, but it also showed how brittle the politics of One Nation are. And my job always is to develop those policy alternatives with my team and present them in a way that meets Australians where they are, recognises the real circumstances they're facing under this government, fights for them, holds the government to account, and I'll be working every single day between now and the next election to do exactly that, because Australians deserve a lot better than the government they've got now, and I'll be working very hard for the next election for people to put the Liberals as number one.
Are you concerned that they're stealing some of your vote? They're not a normal political party. They're quite different to the other players in this parliament, I think.
Look, these are terms commentators use. The only poll that matters is the one on election day. And I know you hear politicians say that quite often, but when you think about it, it's actually true. And capturing sentiment along the way is all very well, and it makes for interesting political commentary, maybe. But, you know, when I go out into the community and I listen to what people are telling me, it's never couched in those terms. It's about themselves, their lives, and they'll ask, you know, maybe they say to me, we didn't vote for the Liberals at the last election. A lot of people didn't. But I talk to them about that, and I talk about our values. I talk about some of the things I've already enunciated as policy with respect to how we would manage the budget, how we would deliver personal income tax cuts, how we would start to address workplace relations, which is a drag on productivity and not in the interests of employers or employees. I talked to them about how we're going to have a strong proposition around our principles on migration by the end of the year. And, of course, I talked to them about energy because energy is part of the cost of living crisis that they're facing.
I'm glad you mentioned immigration. I was hoping to raise it with you. It's something that people in your party are eager to have a debate about, and you've flagged that it's something you'll be working on between now and the end of the year. There are neo-Nazis walking in the streets around the biggest cities. Pauline Hanson's stunt we've already talked about. Real concern about social cohesion in Australia. Is it possible that this is a bad time to have a heated debate about immigration?
I do want to say that I am concerned too about social cohesion, and I've seen real anti-Semitism stalking our streets since October 7, 2023, and it's been pretty hideous when you consider how some of these groups have responded to our Jewish community. And there is no place for this type of extremism, and action has been taken by New South Wales government, and perhaps to a lesser extent, in fact, insufficiently, I would say, by Victoria, to stop these repeat demonstrations, the paraphernalia, the chants, the shouting, and the messages of hate. There isn't any place in Australia for messages of hate. And with respect to our policy on migration, that is about the infrastructure challenges the country faces, and that's something that every community is reflecting back at me, including people who come from migrant communities. And I'm a migrant to Australia, like many, like about 30% of this country. So it's something everyone is talking about, and it's not the fault of any migrant or migrant community. So when I talk about these issues, I'm clear to always say that, just like I'm saying to you, Tom, so that your listeners hear it. This is not the fault of any migrant or migrant community, but we are seeing real pressures on the commute to work, on the infrastructure in our cities, on schools, on hospitals, and yes, on housing. And so we have to get that balance right, and that's what the principles that we will talk about towards the end of this year will be aimed at.
Are you concerned about the debate going in a different direction when other members of the coalition put forward their views? Are you at all concerned that some of your message about the importance of the principles could be lost?
I've been really encouraged by the conversation that we've had to date, and I've been really encouraged by people's genuine interest in what we do to present a serious migration policy, which is something this government hasn't done. And different colleagues are engaged in different parts of this because it's, of course, more complicated than just one number or one point in time, which is perhaps the reason why the Labor Party never talks about a plan and never gets the numbers right. So migration is about international students, yes. It's about skilled migrants, and they're very important to my part of the world. It's about working holiday makers, who we see often in the cafes, particularly in our bigger cities, who are balancing time spent here with a working holiday visa and then also travelling the country and hopefully spending some tourist dollars. It's about the family reunion program. It's about the humanitarian program. And I mentioned skilled visas, but there's a host of different ones. And then within all those categories, there's different times that you might be here. There's different visas that you can transition to. There's bridging visas. There are, of course, 100,000 people on visas who shouldn't be here, who are actually here unlawfully, who are certainly adding pressure to the numbers. So you would expect that we would take the time to work through a lot of this, and we just don't have all the information from the government. It's not as if they can let us know what's going on in each of those subcategories. But the principles are important, and people are looking forward to them.
Are skilled worker visas on the table as part of the discussion, given that the reliance that we have in the economy from overseas workers?
Well, think about it like this. Skilled visas are vital, particularly to construction. And in the last parliament, there's the skills in demand list, where Australia has always prioritised visas for those occupations because we're short of them. And Labor didn't even have the construction industry and the construction trades on that list. They finally did after we did some work behind the scenes and others, because it made no sense that there were some visas that were very easy to get with jobs that perhaps weren't in demand, and I'm not disparaging any individual job, but the real importance of the construction industry seemed to be overlooked. So that gives a sense of how we've always done this. And then there's also been regional visas, because there are parts of Australia where it's really hard to get anyone in the workforce. And so when we were in government, we did rely quite a lot on regional visas, and the government changed that, and it became much harder for the employers that I represent in my electorate of Western New South Wales to actually find anyone, because people who took those opportunities ended up not coming to regional Australia. So there's a lot of policy to work through.
I think the takeaway from your answer there is that some important jobs that are in real demand and that match the national interest could be prioritised and others could be deprioritised.
That's actually not any different from how it should operate now. I don't know that it's actually operating that way at all now. We get lots of mixed messages from the government, but I'm not pinpointing any particular area to describe it in any great detail. What I'm doing, I hope, is giving a sense of all of the things that we need to carefully work through.
Okay. It's the last day of Parliament for the year, and there's a reflective mood around the place. You've proven some of your critics wrong. You've made it to the end of the year as opposition leader. What are your reflections on the past 6 months? Is the job harder than you expected?
I always expected the job would be a big job, in the sense that we came out of a really tough election result, and leading a political party is by definition a big job. It was one that I knew I was up for at the time. I know I'm still up for the job and well equipped to do what needs to be done to deliver a serious, credible policy alternative come the next election to convince the Australian people to vote for us. And it's a huge privilege to be the leader of the Liberal Party. I still remember when I was first a candidate, and that's going back perhaps 25 years, and I put Liberal Party logos on the caravan that I had lived in when I was a shearer's cook in Western Queensland and worked in the shearing sheds and gained, a great sense of the dignity and reward of a hard day's work in the hot sun. But me putting those Liberal Party logos on my caravan, which I got out of the hay shed at the farm and sort of pumped up the tyres and hooked up to my old Holden, was a real sense of pride in those values of the Liberal Party that I still hold dear, that are the same now as they were then. And sure, between the shearing shed and being the candidate, I earned 3 finance degrees, including a specialist degree in tax, and worked as a public servant again in Canberra and did many things. But for me, the honour is something that I see through that very first trip up and down the Murray River, and what I learnt as a candidate, which is that it's about listening to people. And we do a lot of talking in this building, particularly in a parliamentary sitting week. But the most important thing that I think we must do as leaders is to always listen. So over the summer, I'll be doing a lot of that.
Do you have any reflections on your historic status as the first woman to hold the job?
It sends a signal, and I understand that, but it's much more than that.
Does it make it harder?
I wouldn't necessarily say that it makes it harder. I see the signal, as I said, that it sends. People make their own decisions about me, and my mother always said, what other people think of you is none of your business. So I don't spend a lot of time trying to consider, if I can put it that way, what people think. I am someone who approaches what I need to do, and that's why we have been busy with policy. And my reflection on the last 6 months is that I've enjoyed every opportunity to talk about the policies that we have developed and the importance to the Australian people: budget repair, living within our means, personal income tax, 3% defence spending as a floor, not a ceiling, industrial relations, migration, energy. And it's always good when my friends in the media give me an opportunity to talk about the importance of those policy areas, and I thank you for allowing me to do that today.
On the internal politics, let me ask you another question. I mean, if the blokes try and tear you down next year, will you fight to keep your job?
I don't look at it as fighting for me. I look at it as doing my job in the best way that my team needs the Liberal National Coalition to do its job to fight for Australians. So I don't see it through the prism of it being about me. it's never been about me. It's about what I want to do for the people and the country that I care so much about. And I think when you migrate to Australia, and I was 13 when I came here, I think you have a special relationship with the country that has given you so much. And I often, when I talk to migrants, I get that sense from them. And some people's migrant journey has been a lot more challenging than mine, but mine was challenging enough in the early years, and it wasn't the easiest transition to make. But you just really love this country, and I know Australians love Australia in the best possible way. We've just had a reception with the English and Australian Prime Ministers 11, and something that unites us all is the cricket. But there are many other things that unite Australians, and there are unique and amazing aspects to our country that this summer will cause me to feel that sense of gratitude more deeply.
But you're a tough person, Susan Lee. I can't imagine that you would let them walk all over you and not fight for yourself, fight for your position.
Look, this is commentary. It really is. It's not my lived experience of either the last 6 months or my anticipation of the next six either. It's really a good feeling to lead a team that's coming together around policy development in the way that we have on energy, to have a plan that we're all out there fighting for, to know that while we all have our different views inside our party room, which is one of the strengths of the Liberal Party, you can't really disagree in the Labor Party, but you can in our party, that when we unite behind something that we all agree on, it's a fight worth having. But it's still not about us. It's about Australians who really are struggling. And when I hear that two-thirds of Australians say they couldn't manage to pay an unexpected bill of $2,000, that's pretty sobering. And they're not saying we just put it on the credit card. They're saying, I don't know what I would do. So I think it's real. I know it's real because I'm listening to Australians. And so that just gives me strength and determination. And some days I get angry on behalf of Australians who I know deserve a better deal.
We'll be right back.